Hi, my name is Sean Shaler. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. And I'm so sorry to tell you, he shut down his OnlyFans page. There's too much distraction with the minifigs. It just wasn't good. And so he's this other YouTube and Twitter and Spotify fame. I say Spotify. I'll fix it someday, but I say that I don't know how. I don't know how to fix it. Not that starting Jeez, fresh.
I do get a shout out to the people who do listen to our podcast on these various things. They do reach out and it's like, hey, this is an update. I'm like, sorry, we're working on it. But you can go listen on YouTube Music, which is for free. Hmm? But YouTube Music always works. YouTube Music just takes the straight from pretty much YouTube and puts it up there. So
if you flag it on YouTube as a podcast, YouTube Music will grab the audio only. So I've had, I think I've pointed maybe two people in a few months to YouTube Music, and it, I don't know. I mean, I know people are, Google's never in a good light ever. Right now, they're like especially kind of not in a good light, but YouTube Music works. And so, yeah, welcome to Avatar, The Last Podcasters, and kind of sort of adjacent to our last episode. This episode, I wanted to do our top five villain, I'm going to call it redemption arcs. They're not always big arcs, but there's an arc. And we're going to do top five redemption arcs, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we do that, Chris, how have you been? What have you been up to? How's life?
I'm doing good. my daughter had a marching band thing today, and whatever, that wasn't important. But afterwards, one of her friends, her parents didn't come yet to pick her up. And so I stayed with her because she was by herself. Me and my daughter stayed with her because she was by herself and just waited for her parents to pick her up. But I did have a conversation. We all had a conversation about Dr. Stone, because Dr. Stone is wrapping up the season. And it was just kind of interesting to talk about Dr. Stone with my daughter and her friend and stuff. And I don't know. But I have been thinking a lot about Dr. Stone. That's why I was bringing it up, because I was also just looking up a character from it as pertains to this. But Dr. Stone is so good. I love the show. It's I think it's a very slept on anime, and it's really good. People should check it out.
Does your daughter follow that one pretty closely? I know that sometimes she has like divergent anime opinions.
No, we watch it together. Like a new episode coming every Thursday, and I'm like, hey, time to watch Dr. Stone. And yeah, it's one that we absolutely do watch.
Oh, that's nice.
Together.
That's adorable. What instrument does she play? I don't think we've ever talked about her being into band.
She also plays the piano. She's better at the piano.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Not that she was better at the piano, but I did help you move
my old house.
And I'm pretty sure I probably asked, is like, Chris, your wife play the piano? And you're like, no.
My wife can play a piano a little bit, but I need to get that piano tuned. My daughter, I think my daughter's really good at piano. I think she is. I think if she really loved it and practiced really hard, she would be really great at it. But right now, she's just really good at it.
That's my thing that my parents made me do younger age, and they made me do it and take like weekly lessons and stuff. I didn't like it at all. And in hindsight, I was like, I don't think I was too bad at it. Like, Sean, you probably should have just stuck with that a little bit. I still have a keyboard in my house, and I sit down like once a month and I'll play like the Pokemon theme song, and I'll be like, that was nice. And then I'll forget about the keyboard for a month. But, that's cool. Chris, at some point here, I don't know if it's this week, I will be going on vacation to Green Bay. And it's not like an exciting vacation just to see some friends. But I'm going to Green Bay.
I was like, why would you go to Wisconsin?
Because I do really like cheese. And I wish I was joking. That's probably half the reason. Big cheese fan. And, I like beer too. So actually Wisconsin, and if I liked cold weather, I think I'd make an okay Wisconsinite, because all they care about up there is football and cheese and beer, but it's the cold weather that's the kicker. But what I'm getting at is we're taking our baby on a plane, and I'm super nervous.
Oh my gosh!
I know, right? Is that a terrible idea? It probably is. Taking our baby on a plane.
Most people have one thing. It's almost irresponsible not to come with headphones or something on the plane. And so, like, that's all you need is if a baby's not quiet and stuff.
Thankfully my baby is one of the chillest babies you'll ever be around, and I mean, I know your parent probably says that, but that's not true. I've heard parents say, oh no, my baby was an awful baby, but now they're a good person, you know, whatever. No, he's a super chill baby. I think we're on Delta, and just to bring to like a John Mulaney joke, but I also think they literally will give you headphones, like a $2 set of headphones, and there's TV screens in the back, so not super worried about other people. It's just like the nerve-wracking idea of traveling with a baby.
Yeah.
And then, he can't.
Then I would worry about the airplane ear. My airplane ear was bad when I came back from Vegas. I mean, it only lasted like half a day. But like, it was so bad, I got a headache. And so I slept the next. One thing, I was already tired. And I slept the next morning for like the whole morning. I didn't have any meetings. I was like, oh, the stupid ear.
I think the doctor said we could just give him like a bit of his little baby aspirin before he gets on the plane. That'll probably be okay. But yeah, taking a baby traveling, which is ridiculous because he probably doesn't understand football and he can't eat cheese or drink beer. He's really missing the whole point. But we'll show him off to our friends. That'll be fun. And yeah. That'll be that, and while we're gone, there'll be Superman episodes to play.
Yeah,
pre-recorded. So that'd be great. Chris, let's start talking about villain turns. And so, top five. I don't want to say best. I'm just top five villain redemption arcs.
Yeah,
and a couple of notes is that one, just because I wanted like an extra slot, we're just not going to include Zuko and Iroh because we know that's. It's the best in their own unique ways.
Because it is a given. The thing is, it is a, like, to every, anyone who's watched Avatar, it's like the Zuko has the best bad guy to good guy character arc ever. And I would almost argue he doesn't. The Iroh does. But either way, they're one and two.
I was to say, it's when we develop Iroh the way that we do on the show or we treat him, It's super duper close. It probably doesn't feel close if you don't give Iroh the credit of having been a bad guy, which is something that people like to do.
Yeah,
but once you accept that, it becomes like, that's one A and one B right there is what it becomes.
I did watch a video recently by some channel, not a channel that I watch often. It might have been Game Theory or whatever, or TV Theory. Well, anyway, they're like, is Iroh a war criminal? And my thing is like the semantics. Like, did he commit war crimes? Probably not, because war crimes, if you define them, are like, I don't know, guerrilla warfare, or
that's
like
probably that would be dishonorable like, but, in like a Fire Nation standard, wouldn't it? Like, Fire Nation's no, we're gonna follow the rules and beat you to a pulp.
Yeah. His conclusion, I believe, was like, he's not a war criminal in that sense, but he still committed these other things defined as war crimes, of like attacking or invading an innocent.
He was a high-ranking official in a nation committing genocide.
Yeah. How they worded it. It was interesting, and I did learn a little bit more about like war and stuff at the end of this video. It also, because I went into the video kind of like, this is a dumb notion because it doesn't matter what he did. Like, we can't excuse what he did.
It's literal semantics, not semantics when somebody's just trying to ignore something. Like, oh, it's not about semantics. Like, no, it actually is a semantics of like, okay, well, he didn't commit war crimes. I guess, you know, it's whatever, but
he didn't set ablaze their food. or yeah, whatever.
He didn't go like torching farms and villages for fun. He just, you know, didn't let people out of the city for a really long time. Yeah. I think, but so yeah, if you start treating Iroh as the former villain he is, it becomes 1 and 1A, and I think that's great. And we're just going to say, yep, we're keeping him off our list as a top five other ones. And I say top five loosely because I know you have more than five, and I have more than five kind of as well.
I'll start off with I'll have the honorable mentions.
Okay.
And then, which, honestly, my honorable mentions isn't that. I don't have that many honorable. Hey, I got five. Yeah. Yeah, we'll snake it. I'll go my five, you go your five, or vice versa, whatever, then 4 and 3 and 2 and 1.
That sounds perfect. That sounds perfect. Yeah, go with your HMs first.
Oh, we usually wait to do HMs.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I'm going to say now in advance so that my HMs, it's almost like I had a set at every, my five was like this guy, but also if you said this guy, I get it. And then number four, this guy. But also, if you said this guy, I get it. But anyway, we'll address that later when we come. Chris, I'll go first. I'll do my five.
Okay.
And my number five is the Grinch. And I promise I'm not being stupid. I just really love the turn of the Grinch. It's my favorite Christmas movie, specifically the Jim Carrey one. I think the Jim Carrey one is the best developed Grinch. You get the little childhood trauma Grinch and all the little backstory. And also, it kind of paints the, I think it paints the best picture of like the real meaning of Christmas and how it got lost in consumerism. That's a good movie. And the Grinch, that's a good villain turn. I'm not being stupid. I'm dead serious. I love it.
I mean, yeah, that's all about redemption and turning over. Like, he was the Grinch. He was the most hated person.
And he turned that village's beliefs on its head, Chris, at the end of the movie. He on his head.
Sorry, I don't. It's been such. I'm sure I have watched The Grinch all the way through, but it's been such a long time that, like, and I've watched scenes like here and there of like just Jim Carrey being just an absolute.
It's the perfect force. Grinch. He is the perfect Grinch. It's the stupidest bit, and it's perfect.
You know what? You know what? This is real quick. A thought I had, like, comedic acting doesn't get enough credit. And I had this thought, and then I redid this thought. So I recently rewatched Tropic Thunder. because
not what I thought you were going to say. All right, go on.
But I love that movie when it came out. I still love the movie, but I haven't watched it in like maybe 5 or 6 years. So I need to watch Tropic Thunder. And I will say this off the bat. The reason why I'm bringing this up is that Robert Downey Jr., that's his best acting performance. And I say that with full sincerity. And then I forgot, or I just maybe I never known, he actually got nominated for an Oscar for that role.
Oh, I don't know if I knew that. It's wild.
Think about the
lightning rod for controversy that whole setup was, and how well he took that very difficult role.
Also, let me say, blackface is horrible.
Yep.
Not the blackface in general is horrible. And the thing about the thing about that role is that oftentimes blackface is horrible because it is talking down at people, right? Like most of the, you know, it's punching down. It's punching down at something. It's making fun of that thing. It's not laughing with it. I feel like Rob, and also it's offensive, has offensive stereotypes and stuff. I don't think there was a fifth stereotype of Robert Downey Jr. Like he, and also it's a commentary on blackface, and so like it's a meta joke, right? And so you can get away with stuff. One, if you're funny enough, sure, you can get away with it. Two,
well, people got to know that you're funny too, right? They can't be like questioning you, like, oh, seriously? It's like, no, it's got to be good, well delivered comedy. Yeah.
And two, you have to be considerate and well meaning and not, again, be punching down. And, like, every black person I've ever seen drop it down. Black people feel free to, because we're not a monolith, feel free to hate that rendition of it. But a lot of people I know We love that. Robert Downey Jr. Because, again, he is, and it's so meta, he is an actor. I saw someone talk about it, like, that he is playing an actor who is so entrenched in playing on this role that he thinks he's black. He really thinks he's black. And so it's not a black thing. Anyway, my whole point of it is that that's his best acting role. And I honestly forgot he was nominated, or I never knew he was nominated for an Oscar, but that's the best acting he's ever done. Especially in the scenes where, like, he's breaking, he's becoming, he's like going back to the Australian actor while still like kind of crossing over. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Anyway. We could do a whole episode, because I have pretty strong feelings on this of like, so we talk about like meta commentary, and so the example that at least I would give, or that I'm most familiar with, would be like Blazing Saddles, or like those old like racial commentary within Mel Brooks jokes. Is like the role of the meta commentary comedy, and you know how you should be able to feel about it and to be okay with it and appreciate it for what it is, but then still does it do more harm than good because of the like the misunderstanding or like the lightning rod that we could do a whole 60 minutes on that someday. I don't know if anybody would listen to it, but I just have pretty strong feelings on that stuff. But long story short, being come back to comedy, the Grinch. Acting. Comedy is underappreciated.
Jim Carrey is one of the best actors, like, ever.
If Jim Carrey's face didn't naturally look hilarious, because his face, when I see him in serious roles, I'm like, he did a great job acting. But he's still Jim Carrey. You know what I mean? It's got such a unique facial structure and aesthetic to him.
You know how Jim Carrey got his start, right?
No, not top of my head.
Really? So speaking
of, guess like an SNL or something, like a Mad TV.
Speaking of other comedians that black people love, white comedian or white people that black people love. Jim Carrey got his start on In Living Color. Which was
no kidding.
Which is on like that's what he got his start on, like all the Wayne brothers and stuff. Wayne brothers, Jamie Foxx, Dave Allen Greer, so many freaking legends. And then they brought in Jim Carrey, and they brought in another white actress, and she was great also, a white comedian. And so like Jim Carrey would just do these like, like he was just so funny on that show. Like he played like this. Fire inspector was always on fire. But yeah, that's how that was his big break, was in Living Color.
Oh, I had no idea. That's awesome. It kind of fits his whole vibe, though. Just everything about him is just a little unique. But yeah. Chris, number five, The Grinch, and I'll die on that hill. Could have been higher. Could have been higher. He changed the meaning of Christmas for a whole city.
Yeah. My number five is... this is a big spoiler. If you have not seen this show, I would just, I don't know,
mute. Do you want to say the name? Say the name of the show first, and then
the show is The Good Place. The character has a great arc, great bad guy to good guy arc is Michael from The Good Place. Like, and it's so weird because when you meet him, he is Michael. He is lovable and stuff, and he is there to help you, and then that turn of you really are the worst, Eleanor. It's like, wait, what? And then he spins like the nets. It's kind of funny because
that episode's incredible when he's re-spinning it and it just keeps working out.
And there's one time that Gianju figures out, he's like, Gianju, gosh, this one really hurts, and then just snaps back. You might not have to think of him because he is the bad guy for all of season one and like half of season two.
Who do you mean when you say Gianju? Who you mean? Jason? Chidi?
Jason. No, Jason.
Okay.
Yeah. Gianju is his... No, okay, I'm sorry. I said Gianju. That is his fake name. But Jason. Yes, Jason.
I didn't even remember Gianju that. I thought you were just like superimposing some Avatar stuff. It's like, no, you're just Jason. You know, the guy with the butthole.
Gianju? Wait, who's Gianju in Avatar? Is it
Gianju, the bad guy from the Kyoshi novel?
Yeah. Wait, do they have the same name?
I have no idea now, but we're going to have to Google it and find out.
good place. I believe they have the same.
See, I didn't remember that name at all because I say it like once. So your memory is incredible. If you're right, and if you're wrong, it's like, oh, well, they said it like one time.
Okay. oh gosh. Because I know they don't call them. Okay, wrong. Oh gosh, and now I gotta find it. Okay, good place wiki. Jianju, huh? Jianyu. It's spelled Jianyu. So that's why Jianyu, Jianyu, but not Jianju, Jianzu. Wait. Now
the second one's like a word. In the Avatar one, the second ZHU is like a softer, like Jianju.
Yeah, right. Jianju. This is not that. This is Jianyu. Okay, but that's why. All right, they're close, but they're Jianyu. Yes. Jason. Yeah, Jason figured it out one time.
Great turn. Yes. I admit that it's not on my list because I didn't think of it. That's a great turn.
Yeah,
and he's got Michael eventually, like an actual growth arc and everything to him across a couple seasons.
Yeah, and he goes from being, you know, the demon who's trying to torture them, and then they bring him onto their team, but reluctantly because he doesn't want to be found out. And eventually, he grows to learn about them. And then there's that scene where they're like, "Is Michael betraying us right now or not?" And then they find out that he was all on their side, and he's like, "Guys, like I love you guys and stuff." And he's slowly becoming human. And by the end of the series, they let him, after they figure out how to plan out the afterlife, they let him, as a gift, go and be a human without any like memories and stuff. He just has to, wait.
He does. He knows that he has his memories.
I think so too.
Yeah. Because he gets a coupon that's like a callback to something else that he mentioned in the mail, and he's really excited. I think it's season three, and there's an episode. It's season three, I think. Is that the one where they get to go, like, kind of relive their life on Earth to a degree to see if different circumstances would make them better people or whatever? And there's one where, like, he shows up in the bar. And Eleanor is like kind of veering back towards the bad, and he just gives her a nudge. And I always think to myself, "Is like that's why I kind of believe that, and I feel like that's why you should kind of nudge people toward. Like sometimes people just need the positive little kick. That's a good person, and they need a kick. And someday you'll need that kick in the pants, and you hope somebody gives it to you. And that episode always kind of touched me in the heart a little bit.
Yeah, I mean it creates a chain reaction, you know.
Yeah, kick those people in the pants with a little positivity.
Yeah. Great. What's your number four?
Do you want to snake it? You go number four.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. My bad. Snake. My number four is the first. Honestly, it's iconic, I think, for 90s kids. It is the first bad guy to good guy arc that many of us have seen. It's a big show. Are you able to perhaps guess it?
Not off that. Give me one more hint. You develop another hint?
Came on Fox. It's not a cartoon.
Okay.
It's a TV show. TV show.
Fox. What was on Fox? No, I got nothing.
Okay. It is, my number four is Tommy, a.k.a. the Green Ranger. From Power Rangers.
Nicely done.
Like
nicely done.
Like I remember like because he came on the scene, he was meeting them, he was kind of cool with them and stuff. Like, yeah, we can like sparring with Jason, and then Rita gets her hands in him, and then he beat the dog crap out of the Power Rangers. Like it was nuts, Sean. He went up in their Zords. Beat the crap out of them, literally kicked them out of their swords, and then started to just take them out one by one. He like took his sword and like threw it at I think Jason, and it hit him in the chest.
Like, with a no with one the has clash ever beat of sparks.
The yeah, yeah.
So everything got a spark like, in that show.
No one has ever beat the brakes off the Power Rangers the way the Green Ranger did. And so to go after, because I think that lasted maybe 3 episodes. And then for, those are some great 3 episodes. Oh my gosh. When Jason was like stuck in Rita's castle and like he had to fight Goldar without his power coin, without his Morpher.
And great then he looking had to, castle for kids television too, may I say.
Yeah.
Really
yeah,
cool.
Oh gosh, yeah. He had to like hide in the smoke underneath, and Goldar is like, so good. And then, yeah, then they finally defeat Tommy and bring him back to their side. So good. Yeah, maybe I'd be speaking for a lot of 90s kids, but I think that was one of the first bad guy to good guy arcs that we've seen that really opened our eyes to like, oh, the world isn't black and white.
The only thing, I think that's the earliest I can remember in kind of a legitimate fashion. I'm asking myself if, like, Casey Jones on the TMNT cartoon, but he wasn't really, like, his intentions were kind of clear. Probably he was just confused because he was approached by human-sized mutant monsters. So this isn't really a turn. So I think that's fair to say that, at least in my experience, that's the first like big turn. And what made me mad though, Chris, the only thing that made me mad is he had a cooler suit. Like when he flipped to be the, well, no, on his greener, he had like little like shoulder pads on his suit the other guys didn't have, and that made me jealous.
I know. Oh, and then one time he gave the shoulder pads to Jason, and like Jason wore the gold with the red, because it was like, Jason was like, I'm not the swordsman you are, and Jason gave him his sword because Tommy only had the dagger. And then Tommy's like, but you're gonna need protection. Take my shield. And he like touched his shield and like touched Jason's chest, and his shield like transformed to Jason. And like, oh, that's cool freaking moment.
What do you think the guys that the two high school bullies whose names I'll think of as soon as you say them out loud? What's that?
Bulk and Skull.
When we're done here, I kind of know what happened to a lot of the Power Ranger actors, because they'll show up at cons and stuff like that. So, like, I have a general idea of where they are today. I wonder what happened to the guys that, like, on their resume, like, I played Bulk and Power Rangers. Where are those guys?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. But great turn. Another one I hadn't thought of even a little bit. That's a great turn. Chris, my number four is Megamind. Underappreciated family movie. I think they do a really nice job there again of kind of like the Grinch of kind of developing his origin and kind of planting the seeds for the actual choice he makes. And that to me is like part of a good turn, with all due respect to a name that you're not going to see on my list, which is Darth Vader. That's a really interesting, like, crux, like a plot point. I get why it's good, but there's no good build up to it. Like, all we have at that time, especially at that time before the prequels, all we have at that time is that this guy has been really bad and probably knew he was Luke's dad the whole time, and then you see Luke in person and all of a sudden you're like,
oh my god.
Yeah, like, I don't know. The groundwork just isn't there. And so, and that'll probably be a common theme, I think, through my list, is that it's places where the groundwork, I think, is there more often than not for a good turn. And Megamind, it was a cool, interesting take on a flick. And they did a nice job of developing this bad guy turned good guy. The outcast turned.
Yeah. Man, it's funny how many superhero movies were made before the superhero
hype. The Marvel peak.
Yeah, and like, man, should we... And some of these movies are probably outdated. Like, I love the movie Sky High. Like, oh, speaking of another... You never seen Sky High?
I'm not familiar with that.
Ah, love Sky High. So, Sky High, the
it
movie
sounds
came
like
out
a
probably...
made-for-Disney movie about basketball. Sky High.
It was a theatrical release movie. It has decent enough effects, but it's not like a big budget film. But it's a movie about in this universe of superheroes and stuff. It's kind of like a My Hero Academia, but a very American version. Anyway, there's a high school first superheroes. And the two greatest superheroes ever have a son. He doesn't have superpowers, but he somehow... Oh, he still goes to Sky High, because they're just like, oh, you're our son. Like, you'll get powers, but he doesn't have superpowers. Anyway, there's a great... I like that movie a lot. It's kind of almost a cult classic, I think. I think it's definitely worth the watch. Anyway, in it... Why was I talking about Sky High? In it.
No, I didn't. I don't remember. Height of superhero movies. After kind of these quirky but really like well-intentioned superhero adjacent things.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. That's another good superhero movie before its time.
I'll have to check that out and put it on my list after The Rocketeer and The Mask of Zorro, which we keep talking about, and I can't remember if we talk about on air or off air, but it's on my list. Chris, my number three, and I'm stepping into your territory here for sure. And it's not that I don't know and respect it for myself.
Before we get to your number three, you mentioned one that I think we need to have a little conversation on. That's, I'm sure, not on either of our lists. And that was Darth Vader you had brought up.
Yeah. So let me just say that as for all the issues with the prequels, I have plenty. I would say that Darth Vader's turn needs those prequels to be a good turn. I think without those prequels, Darth Vader's turn just is like a random switch flip where he just like chickened out and is like, ah, I can't watch this guy die. It's my son, I guess.
I've heard the best way to watch is episode 4, then the prequels, then episode 5, and 6.
I understand.
Just so you can be like,
I understand thematically, but I just don't think my brain would let me do that. I think my brain's going to say, hey, you got to do it release order or chronology order, and those are your choices.
I think Darth Vader's redemption arc is the most overrated redemption arc ever. Like, to me, that's not a redemption arc. To me, he was really crappy until the final end. Like, he destroyed a planet. No,
bitter end. Last possible second.
Really great person. Saw his son was going to die. Saved his son. Mm-hmm. Killed the Emperor. That's selfish still. It's not like, I got to save my son to save the universe because I'm redemptive now. It's like, that's my son. Like, it's better, but it, to me, is not redemptive. Redemptive means it's like, I was wrong. I need to do this to be better. And I've learned my lesson.
This is how I fix the problems I created. It's not a requirement for redemption arc, but it's like not just making the right choice right now. It's like, no, there's a hole that you dug.
Yeah. I mean, I get he's definitely remorseful or definitely regret.
Regret. I wouldn't say remorseful. That's a better word for it. He might be the most overrated of all time. I'm going to agree with that kind of blindly without thinking about it just because of the hype of those movies. I will say it becomes better with the prequels just laying the groundwork for like, no, see, this was his motivation. And that's how you can start to like theater the mind a little bit of like, okay, I get it. Even though in 1979, they definitely didn't. George Lucas didn't know that in 79, but I get it. And that detracts from me, man. You can't. It's one of the things I don't like about prequels. You don't get to save this thing that you did with more stuff. Like, I don't know. I want to take it what it was.
I also saw this. I believe it was from Dave Filoni, and Dave Filoni is like the Star Wars guy. He's also kind of the Avatar, directed many episodes in season 1 of Avatar, and then he moved on to Clone Wars. And then that
good
brings up Clone
good
Wars.
TV show, Clone Wars. Someone, good TV show.
I never really seen it. The thing about Star Wars is that I'm not interested in the actual Star Wars aspect of Star Wars. I'm interested in the Sith versus the Jedi. Star Wars aspect of it, I'm just like, whatever. Trade Federation, blah, 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 pew, pew, pew. But they mentioned, like, if you look at Anakin's perspective of, like, the Clone Wars, like, Anakin is, like, a decorated general in the Clone Wars. Like, he is a high-ranking general, decorated. Everyone, he saved, so like, on the Jedi Council, he saved most of their butts two times over. And then, like, when they're like, oh, we don't recognize you as a Jedi Master, like, he gets pissed because he's like, I am, like, I've done all this stuff. Like, I saved you all multiple times. I am stronger than most of you here. And so, like, in his head, there's a little thing that ticks of, like, they don't appreciate me and stuff like that. The Clone Wars... even though I've never seen Clone Wars, that put it into a different perspective for me.
It's, okay, so it's huge, so it's unfair, right? Just in the amount of time to develop, it's a big TV series.
Yeah.
But it's probably the best single, like, chunk of Star Wars media, I would suggest. Like, if you told me, like, all right, you get the, you know, the prequels of the original trilogy or Clone Wars or the next, like, no, the Clone Wars is, like, the best storytelling, I think, probably, of the group. But, again, neither of us is terribly Star Wars people. So, you know, grain of salt is all I'm getting at, grain of salt. Sorry, Vader.
All right, you're number three.
My number three. So I said, it's not that I don't feel or believe this, but definitely stepping farther into your realm. But I wanted to make sure that Vegeta got on one of our lists, literally turns into the defender of Earth, you know? And I just wanted to make sure that I had some anime representation on my list. Cause I think that redemption arcs is probably very common and frequent in anime my limited perspective. I'm going to take the easy answer. I'm going to just say, I think that Vegeta was the easiest call for, yep, that's a...
if Vader is the most overrated redemption arc, I have to think Vegeta is the second most overrated redemption arc. Only because, I mean, Vegeta doesn't... Vegeta comes to Earth. Him and Nappa... they destroy a city. I know Nappa does it himself. Like, Nappa raises, like, these two fingers. He goes, like, shoo, and the whole city blows up. But Vegeta was with him, and, like, he's fine with it. Vegeta has killed so many people, especially people on other planets. So he killed... he came to Earth, killed a bunch of people, killed a bunch of their best fighters, even though he didn't kill any... Like, again, Nappa killed most of them. Went to Namek, killed a bunch in the making.
He was an enabler.
Yeah, went to Namek, killed a bunch in the Makians. The worst, and that's fine. Well, that's not fine. But in terms of an arc, like, okay, that's bad stuff. Now you're starting to turn good. He started to turn good. And the thing about the moment that Vegeta loses for me is in the Buu saga. He fully succumbs to the Majin. I forget what he's like. What's his name? Babidi. He fully succumbs to Babidi. But he gives over his body to Babidi because Babidi is like, I can make you stronger, and Vegeta's like, fine, make me stronger. And in doing so, Bobby turns Vegeta more evil. Vegeta only wanted to be stronger. One reason why he let Bobby take him over because he wanted to be stronger than Goku. And then at the martial arts tournament, when Vegeta's Majin Vegeta with the M on his head, he like kills a bunch of people in the crowd just to get Goku to fight him. Because Goku's like, I'm not going to fight you right. Like, Goku would fight, but... and spar, but Vegeta may seem like, no, this is death. And so then to provoke Goku, Vegeta kills a bunch of people in the crowd. And then it's funny, and then Vegeta realizes, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Because all this stuff, the whole reason why Babidi wanted to turn Vegeta evil was, like, if there's certain fights or evil or something in the world, it would unlock Majin Buu. So Vegeta fighting Goku actually helps to unlock Majin Buu. Then by the end of by Vegeta, at one point Vegeta has to go fight Buu, and Vegeta, it's like he talks to Piccolo, and like this is when Vegeta's like, all right, I was wrong. He's like, Vegeta's like, okay, I will go kill Majin Buu myself, but I will have to blow myself up to do it. And he asked Piccolo, he's like, because at this point, Goku's dead. And he asked Piccolo's like, when I die, will I go see Kakarot? And Piccolo's like, hell no, you're evil. You're not going to heaven.
Well, and Piccolo himself actually got what I would suggest is a pretty good little turn.
Interesting enough, my number three is Piccolo.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah.
I've got to step backwards just to say and say that I do like that Vegeta's, it's a bit bumpier. It's a bit Zuko-esque where it's not a straight trajectory.
Zuko took two steps back. Vegeta took a mile back. I will say this. In Dragon Ball Super, Vegeta, and even the manga, like, to me, his character arc does really good stuff in there. Because, like, he starts to realize, like, you know what? The Saiyans, we were terrible. And, like, because he comes across some person who's like, I'm going to kill you all because the Saiyans destroyed my planet and stuff. And Vegeta's understanding of why that person wants to do it. So I would say, like, Vegeta's arc as... If I just looked at Dragon Ball Z, I'd be like, it's a fine enough arc. But throughout Dragon Ball Super, I think it's really good.
I don't mind at all that... it's pretty extreme, but I don't mind at all that it's just a little bumpy and ups and downs, because I think that's real, man. I think that if you're a bad guy turned to a good guy, it might look a little bit like that. Old habits die hard. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Piccolo, obviously solid transition. Good planning on our part.
Yeah. Love Piccolo. Another person that black people love is Piccolo.
Is Piccolo black? Just in your, like...
In our racial draft, we drafted him.
You did.
If you're green, yeah, if you're green, honestly, you're black.
But what if everybody on his planet is green?
They're all black. They're all black.
Then they're all black. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. That goes for Skeeter from Doug.
Okay. I mean, Skeeter's
Manhunter.
I can't explain it, but Skeeter's clearly black. I don't know.
Which is weird. Like, the creator of Doug is like, oh, I didn't assign racist to any of them.
Yeah, you did. He's black.
And Doug is white.
Man, still.
And Patty Mayonnaise.
Still the one that got me the most that I never thought of until your video was Harvey Dent. I would have never, like,
Yeah, that's one that, like, I was so stuck on my mind that Harvey Dent is black.
Well,
like, to me, he was just light skinned, and he had that dark, that deep voice that I only ever, as a kid, I only ever heard from Candyman. I forgot his actor's name. He recently passed away. So yeah, Harvey, and he had a little. I think he had a little fro too,
And it looked like the tight curl kind of fro.
Yeah,
no, I would have never would have thought.
And like
that.
Weirdly enough, when he dated Poison Ivy, I was like, oh, a black person's dating a white person. That's new.
Which is funny if you consider that Poison Ivy wears green. I know she's not green, but just having the conversation we had 2 seconds ago.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yes, Piccolo went from an enemy, especially in Dragon Ball, that he went to kill Goku because he is the son, which is so confusing. He is the son of King Piccolo, because when King Piccolo died, he took out an egg, which is still technically Piccolo is his essence. And then, man, when Piccolo jumps in front of Gohan, the Nappa kills him. And he's laying on the floor dead, and Gohan is like, Mr. Piccolo! He's like, Gohan, you are my only friend. And then he dies. I was like, that's probably the second bad guy to good guy arc I saw as a kid.
Now I gotta go back and watch TMNT to see if we're shorting Casey Jones. But I think Casey was just scared like we would all be if we ran into human-sized turtle monsters. He wasn't bad. He had good intentions, Casey Jones, but...
I never watched it.
It's good. It's a good TMNT. I like nostalgia goggles for sure, but I think to this day,
yeah.
It's probably one of the top two iterations of animated TMNT. There's like four or five. Anyway, yeah, well, I'm glad, Chris, I'm going to make a prediction here, and I'm going to suggest that I bet that you have one more anime representation on your list, and I can predict my own, obviously. I'm going to bet you've got one more. I don't have any more anime on my list.
I have, yes, at least one more.
Is it your number two, which is our next thing to talk about right here?
My number two is... I just bought a figure of this person. Dang it. Something's about to fall over. Is it? My number two is this character here. His name is Itachi Uchiha from the show Naruto. And it's to call him a redemption arc or even a bad guy to good guy arc is... It doesn't really explain everything because technically he was never fully bad. So, spoiler alert for Naruto. But Itachi was like part of, so in the main village, right? There's the village is made up of different clans, and there's the Uchiha clan. And the Uchiha clan, like, they were kind of ostracized from the whole clan. The whole clan was kind of worried about their powers and stuff. There's been some resentment between the Uchiha clan and all the rest of the clans. And, like, the Uchiha clan might have a coup against the clan. Itachi, before this, there's, like, ninja wars, like World War II, if you will. And Itachi, even as a little kid, was, like, really smart and really talented. So he was, like, 6 years old. Fighting in wars. And so he saw war from an early age and he hated war. And so when the Uchiha clan is like, hey, we might overthrow the village, Itachi was thought, you know, other people influenced him of like, but he came up with this plan also by himself, like, I need to kill all my clan. So he killed his whole clan and then but left his little brother. So he was the big villain of, I won't say big villain, but he was the villain of the show. Until you find out later that, like, oh, he was just like trying to protect the village. And even though he went to protect the village, he couldn't kill his little brother because he loved him too much. By the end of the series, just like, Itachi's the best character in the show. He is really the Snape of, and I told this Barry, shout out to Barry. He is the Snape of the Naruto universe.
Alright.
Also, I meant to send Barry all the ways Naruto is the same as Harry Potter. There's so many of them. It's kind of crazy.
It's a good segue, Chris, because I got my number two. I did put Snape. This is the hardest one for me because he, as a character, is still a bad person. He's like.
Same with Itachi. He's like,
he's abusive and bad to students. Like, he's maliciously unfair. He spends his whole life crushing on a married chick. Like, he's not a good dude. But he does have the groundwork is there, right? There's a nice foundation for like understanding the motivations by the end of the story. I get it, and then. It was kind of a tremendous act of bravery that ultimately did kind of help save the world. So it's like, all right, I get it. So as much as it's like weirdly the hardest one for me to decide where to include and how high, to me, it's like if people compare it to Vader, just in the terms like a giant blockbuster flick with like a big turn, right? To me, it's better than Vader. It's better developed. It makes more sense.
Yeah.
So Snape is my number two. And I don't know if I have much else to say. I think everybody's seen the movie. He's a bad person, but he does have a good flip. Even if you kind of see it coming, it's fleshed out in a good way, I think, by the end.
I don't think you see it coming. Maybe just the first time I watched the movie, honestly, maybe I wasn't paying that much attention. But I don't think you see it coming.
I'm going to say that. Like, oh, By the end of the second, or no, listen, I'm going to say by the end of the third book/movie, I think at that point, there's got to be an element of your brain of like, all right, every single thing, they always point to like, this is the bad guy, and they want you to make him feel like he's the bad guy. It's like, I don't think they're playing the long game here. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's like a tease. But I don't know. It's, I wouldn't say it's like telegraphed, but it's not like the most best. But there again, that's part of his appeal. It's
If I try to think about it before I'm watching it, I'm not sure I bought what Snape was selling. Mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe there's something else here. Also, he was acting kind of weird. Like, there was scenes where he was like, the scene right before he would go kill Dumbledore, he's like telling Harry Potter, like he's like, maybe I'm remembering this right, where he's just like, still seems to, he's talking to Harry in a way of like, almost pretending, or almost like, hey, just stay here, or I can't explain, but yeah, I'm not sure I've ever fully bought in that, oh, Snape is evil now.
I don't think I have either. I even don't mind, though, that you can see how he, like, landed on a bad path in the first place. Not to say empathetic, right? It's like, oh, yeah, I mean, he's a weird kid that had kind of weird interests, got bullied a bunch, and like, all right, well, of course he's going to side with the guy. It's like, hey, do you want to not get bullied anymore? And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. And then later that guy's like, hey, you want to take over the world? And he's like, shit, we just killed my girlfriend. My imaginary girlfriend. Imaginary, probably. Not because she's imaginary. That's a different kind of imaginary girlfriend. But anyway, that's Snape. That's my number two. That was the hardest one for me to place.
Snape ever have any other romantic entanglements?
None.
Do they ever allude
to stick to a common theme of these episodes? None canon. Chris, let's do some honorable mentions. Just go back and forth on a couple, and then we'll do our ones. I'll start. Chris, I have a comp. I have kind of an honorable mention comp for every person on my list. My first one was Scrooge, right? So if you remember, I had the Grinch. It's like, well, Scrooge also had a turn. His wasn't really a turn. Scrooge?
Are you talking about Scrooge McDuck?
Ebenezer Scrooge, but you can take the DuckTales version of the Christmas Carol, which is a good version. But his turn, he just does it out of fear, man. That's not like a good reason to turn, which is why the Grinch is better. But Ebenezer Scrooge, he's got a nice narrative turn at the end of his days, and he helps poor people, and that's good. Good for him.
That's true. Fear being the driving...
Glad he changed. But that's not a great reason for change. Anyway.
Fear, yeah.
Scrooge?
One I have is Hiei from Yu Yu Hakusho. He starts off wanting to kill Yusuke. He even poisons Yusuke's girlfriend to try and turn her into a demon. And he ends up being like one of the best characters. I mean, he quickly turns on their side, but like reluctantly, because like Yusuke defeats him. And then he gets like, he goes to like spirit jail or whatever. And Yusuke has another mission. They're like, hey, Hiei, if you help him, we'll take some time off of your sentence. And so it's kind of like slowly. And after a while, he builds this camaraderie with them of like, and then at the end, Hiei doesn't even like hate humans anymore. He's just like, and he actually protects a lot of them from wandering demons. Like, he ends up getting a job, essentially. Yu Yu Hakusho ends in a way. The last season is like these three head biggest demons in the world. There's a power struggle between them. One dies of old age. No, he dies of starvation because he stopped eating humans. Because he fell in love with a human, had a baby with her.
It was weirdly touching. Well, I guess I'm going to stop eating them and start procreating.
Yeah, their descendants and descendants and descendants eventually became Yusuke. Yusuke is the descendant of a demon, which is explained some things about him. But even after he stopped eating, he still lived to Yusuke's time, and he trained Yusuke. But like, he was about to die because of starvation because he didn't eat people after falling in love with a human. And once he died, there was a power struggle. And there was a whole tournament about like who's going to take over the demon world. And eventually the people who win is like, all right, hey, no more messing with the human world, guys. But like if humans end up inadvertently coming through here for some reason, like we'll have people have these jobs to to take them back home. And Hiei, who was like a villain, like, I'm going to turn every human into a demon, gladly is like, yeah, I'll do the job, whatever. But his arc is like ends really good. Like he ends up finding like love in a, from this other character.
You can never be too careful, Chris. Never be too careful. My next one, my number four was Megamind. Came out at a similar time to that was Gru from the Despicable Me movie. Megamind's better, yeah, a better turn for sure. I would argue a better movie, but I see the appeal of Despicable Me.
Absolutely.
But same time, where we just hit that two of those movies were similar and had a similar bad guy turned good vibe. And Gru, he's a bad guy who's got like no motivations really to be a bad guy, but then he turns into a good guy in a less good fashion than Megamind.
Yeah.
It's cute.
I got from Dr. Stone, Hayoga and Tsukasa. And Dr. Stone, Senku wakes up this other person to try and, because he needs him to save him from this lion. And Tsukasa is like the strongest person. And anyway, they fight and stuff. Eventually, Tsukasa ends up killing Senku. Eventually, Senku comes back through the power of science and defeats him. And anyway, they start working together by the end of the show.
Next one, I noted Piccolo. I figured we would talk about him at the same time. Okay. And I was like, hey, I know that's a big one for people. That's how I put in Piccolo.
Cool. My last honorable mention is Harley Quinn, which is a
series specific.
I mean, in the comics, she's no longer a villain.
Okay.
Like, which is almost to my annoyance. Like, Catwoman is no longer a villain. I do love her arc in the movie, in The Dark Knight Rises. One of my favorite quotes. And Anne Hathaway, so good in the role.
It's a good role for her.
Yeah. But yeah, Harley is a full-blown... And that's almost like, there's no character, there's no like point in time where she turns good. It's just like a gradual change in the comics.
Not familiar with the comics, but in the, you know, in the TV show, which I do appreciate quite a bit of, it's pretty similar, right? There's just like a gradual shift towards not so much doing good to be a good person, but doing good to piss off bad people. You know, just like we established with Scrooge earlier, bad motivations might still lead to good things. My number two, since my number two is Snape and I was talking about big blockbustery things, I noted like Vader, Gollum, if you put Gollum in that category. See, even Gollum doesn't really get a redemption. Even at the end of the movie, he's still trying to steal the ring. That's not really... That one makes me mad when people say it, but whatever. And then I also just put Sirius, just because I thought that was a good surprise in the third Harry Potter movie slash book. I thought that one was a good... I wasn't expecting that one. I thought that was good. In any movie...
Especially with the name like Sirius Black.
I know.
I mean, I remember the trailer showing his wanted poster and he's screaming behind bars or something.
That bugs me. This guy's because killer. That suggests that when you take a picture of something... It's hard to imagine Sirius Black being a good person that we know he is now, but like taking that picture behind bars, I feel like there's like an implication there that pictures are like what the perception of them is, which is kind of like a neat way to think about a picture in the first place. Like, is it like superficial? So the picture's moving and having personalities is like a representation of like a reader's perception of them rather than of who they actually are. I think there's some deep implications there. But anyway, I noted Sirius, not that he was ever bad, but just that was a good twist, and that Gollum and Vader are a little overrated for my taste. You got any more HMs?
Nope.
Okay, I'll do my number one, and then you do your number one. And are these going to be the same? I don't think this is going to be the same. I think you got a different one.
They absolutely will not be the same.
Okay, cool. Well, then, in that case, I'm actually a little surprised that you didn't include mine on yours. Chris, ooh. I picked Mystique, specifically first trilogy, and then through First Class and Days of Future Past, where it's like the payoff there, right? So the original trilogy, you get bad Mystique, and it makes sense. And she's just a bad person, and she gets a little development throughout those movies or whatever, but just bad Mystique. And then First Class, you get this groundwork laid of her underlying motivations to the bad things that she did and the eventual good turn. And then in Days of Future Past, she's like the pivotal world-saving crux.
That was Jennifer Lawrence after Hunger Games. They were like, we need to make her the pivotal piece of this movie, which worked fine. The writing was good.
Yeah, it was great. Acting-wise, Jennifer Lawrence is great. I think I find, this is the most superficial thing I already started, I find Rebecca Romijn more attractive, but Jennifer Lawrence, great actress. Good for her.
I think, well, yeah, it's not. Interesting.
I don't know if she's a better actress. It's that she just doesn't have as much Mystique, like limelight.
As Mystique, Rebecca Romijn was more
alluring.
One thing, she's more exposed.
Also, that's part of the Mystique. Yeah. Pun intended.
But yeah, maybe she also just has a.
She's
also. I think I just took them at the same age as. Yeah, Rebecca. Like, Jennifer Lawrence is pretty late. I think she has more of a, like, this sounds offensive, it's not offensive, just a non-supermodel prettiness.
Yeah, just like, she's like a person that you see on the street, like, that person's very pretty, and inside your head, and then you move on with your day. Mystique, her flip, essentially, in Days of Future Past, is like, future of the world consequences.
Yeah.
And I think the first three movies are a little low on her development. They get there, they help, but it's really like the First Class then that does help lay the groundwork, and then Days of Future Past that makes it happen. Great. Yeah. This is my favorite bad guy turned good guy, I think, in film or TV. Because you want her to be good. It's not like Snape. Like, Mystique, you want Mystique to turn because she's cool. Like, she's an X-Men. We should all be fighting for the same rights, the same things, and she's got a cool power. You want her to be good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mutant and proud, she says.
Yeah.
My number one, which I knew wouldn't be her number one, is Kachan, a.k.a. Katsuki Bakugo, a.k.a. Great Explosion Murder God Dynamite.
Uh-huh. Nicely said.
That's his name from My Hero Academia. Sure. The thing is, I think it's so such great writing. The thing is, he's not... His goal isn't to be bad. His goal is, I'm going to be the number one hero. That's his goal. He's going to do it.
He's just a dick about it.
Yeah, but he is definitely antagonistic towards Deku, and like Deku's just being nice. And man, like the way they have the best rivalry, like good guy bad guy or brotherly rivalry in anime than anything. Because you know other ones you would think of is like Goku and Vegeta, or
in
Yusuke and Kuribara.
In the manga, Ash and Gary is more represented.
Ash and Gary.
In the manga, it's way better than the show.
Oh,
okay. Like Gary in the show is just a D-bag. Gary in the manga is a little more like motivational rival. Like, hey, you gotta represent and quit being a crappy trainer.
Yeah. So like Deku and Bakugo's relationship goes from like Bakugo just not understanding. Like, how is he getting stronger? I'm sorry, They all have so many freaking multiple names. Kachan. I call him Kachan. Kachan just doesn't understand, one, why is Deku being recognized by my favorite hero, All Might, who I love. One thing, I got them. I say who I love. I meant who. I got them all right here. Those three right there in the middle. So Kachan is like, one thing, kind of jealous of Deku because Deku's getting all this attention. Deku's getting stronger, even though Deku didn't have a quirk before. And he's like, why is he number one? Also, it gets to the point where Kachan gets kidnapped and All Might has to go save him and fight. But that fight ends up with All Might losing all his powers. So Kachan blames himself. He internalizes that even more. And like, he gets to the point where he's like, Deku, me and you, we're fighting right now. And so like, they fight, they have an all out fight. Like no holds bar, like nothing held back. And by the end of it, well, no, at first Deku doesn't want to fight. Deku's like, I'm not going to fight you. Also, they were told you cannot fight. Both of you have been terrible students. You've been acting up. Not terrible students. They've just been getting into trouble because they're both want to be heroes and save people. They were told they cannot fight, cannot use their quirks. But Kachan really wants to fight him. And Kachan is like, he cries to Deku like, why you? Why were you chosen? Like, why did you become his A-plus student? Like, why did I get held back? Kachan's always thought of his power and how it represents him. He's like, and he lost his power because of me. Like, I'm the one that made him lose his power. Like, he feels all this guilt. And then Deku's like, all right, I'll fight you. Because, like, he knew that Kachan just needed to, like, work out this anger that he had, this self-anger. And then they fight and stuff. And then Kachan finds out from Deku that Deku got his powers from All Might. He's like, oh, that explains it and stuff. Anyway, and then they start actually like pushing each other in a way that's still kind of combative, but like Kachan's like, listen, Kachan beats him in that fight, and Kachan's like, listen here, chosen one, like, you got All Might's power now, like, you need to use it, like, you can't lose to people like me, like and then, so like, they're pushing each other, and Kachan's like, I'm going to become stronger than you. And then Deku's like, well, no, I'm going to become stronger than you. So they just start pushing each other. And then the moment that really does it for me, so there's a point earlier, like episode one, where Kachan again gets kidnapped by the sludge monster, and then Deku doesn't have his powers. He doesn't have any powers. He's quirkless. And he runs, like, he says, like, his feet just moved. That's what he says. He's like, I couldn't even control myself. I saw you were in trouble. While so many people, like, there's a crowd of people. And, like, there's even some heroes there. And heroes are like, oh, well, we can't do anything. Like he might just die. Like, everyone is standing around letting Kachan die by this villain because of either they're scared or because of whatever reason. But then Deku, who didn't have powers, runs towards him and tries to save Kachan. And, like, before he, like, suffocates from the sludge monster thing. And he's like, Kachan, like, I wasn't even thinking. Like, my legs just moved. So then later on in the season, later on in the show, Deku's about to get killed by this main villain. And then all you see is these, like, explosions of, like, kind of like a Combustion Man. And, like, you just see them flickering. And Kachan just instinctively, without thinking, like, used his explosion things to propel him, and he kicks Deku out the way, and he takes the shot from Deku, and he doesn't get killed, but he takes the shot from that Deku would have gotten. And then later, like, when Deku's suppressed, Kachan tells him, like, he's like, it's just like you said, like, I couldn't, there was no thinking, I just moved. And so anyway, all of it goes, like, Deku and Kachan become, like, really great rivalries and understand each other, and he goes from being a very, very antagonist hero to being, like, a very supporting in his own way friend.
I would find him more enjoyable if he didn't have to scream everything that he says ever.
That's part of the goodness of, like, even when he's even when they're, like, really cool with each other, like, Deku's talking to someone. Deku's like, oh, my friends and I are happy to train with you. And Kachan's like, I'm not your friend, nerd. It's like,
I think that's always probably going to be one of my biggest hangups with anime, is there's always just a little too much. There's always a character too that just every word they say ever is a full on scream, and it's unnecessary. That's great. Great lists. Very different. Been talking a lot. My throat's all dried up.
Oh my god. Yeah, we've been talking too long. Ask ChatGPT what they thought.
Oh yeah.
Were some. So I asked just best prediction arcs across TV, film, comics, and anime. TV and film, number one, they had Zuko. So AI isn't that dumb. Spike from Buffy, Jamie Lannister. I'm really not that big into Jamie Lannister. Darth Vader, Michael Corleone from, I never watched The Godfather. Loki, Nebula.
Hold on. They got Michael Corleone as a...
That's what... And The Godfather Part 3, apparently.
Oh,
and
it says, okay.
But his struggle to atone for his sins makes his downfall all the more tragic.
Man, that 3 isn't good. That's all right.
I never seen any of them.
1's good.
Okay. Walter White.
We've established from the beginning that Walter is a bad person.
Yeah,
that shows. If anything, so he's a good guy
turned bad.
Yeah, I assume he has a turn. Yeah, that shows.
No, at the end. At the end, he is. I watched the whole thing. Most of it was boring, but also I kind of hate shows where I feel like the main character could stop while they're ahead and be pretty good, and they just make dumb decisions. By the end of it, he gets found out, and to me, he never fully redeems himself because he never takes full responsibility for his actions, and he doesn't try and rectify it at all. And so I'm like, without either one of those, you can't have redemption. Mm-hmm. In anime, they say Vegeta, Itachi, like I just mentioned, Gaara from Naruto. That's also a really good one. Piccolo, Meruem from Hunter x Hunter. That's a decent one. Scar from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, Greed from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. I don't remember that being the case. And some character, Nico Robin from One Piece. In comics, Magneto. I almost include Magneto, but I like him more as a villain. Harley Quinn, Emma Frost, Winter Soldier.
My thing with Magneto is it feels like if they... I don't know. It feels like Magneto would always be drawn back, and we actually have kind of evidence of like him always kind of falling back into his old ways. You know what I mean?
Like when it comes to the X-Men movies, it's kind of just like, will you humans please just leave Eric Lyncher alone?
Yeah. Like he would be a good guy if you'd stop pissing him off.
Like somebody killed his daughter. Like,
and what's his name? Movies. Is that Fassbender? He's a good fit for that.
Yeah. Oh,
for that role.
So freaking good. Michael Fassbender, oh man. When he says at the end of S and First Class, this is one of my favorite scenes in all comic books. He's holding those rockets and he turns them around and Charles is like, Eric, no, they're just following orders. And Eric is like, I've been at the mercy of men just following orders before. Never again. And just and just throws them at him. I was like, ah. Oh. You feel the conviction.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to argue with me. I saw what happened.
Yeah. It's Magneto's is my second favorite comic book villain. Even the X-Men 3, where for some reason all the mutants like to have marks or tattoos, which wouldn't even look any weirder today. But there's a scene where they go, Magneto and Pyro go to the bad guy mutant place, and they're like, you call yourself a mutant, what marks do you have? And Magneto like pulls up the sleeve, he's like, I've been marked before, and trust me, no ink will ever touch my skin again. It's like, this guy is like everything he says and does is one thing, it's you understand where he's coming from, and you understand like he has the most convictions of any character. Perhaps, yeah, he is probably the most convic-
empathy,
convictious character.
Empathy is probably a little too strong, but like no bad guy maybe hits you in the feels for like, oh geez, man, they really did do you dirty. Quite like Magneto, I don't think.
Yeah, and also it does. It's very easy for us to understand because the Holocaust was not that long ago. It was horrible, and like we know what we. Well, I'm gonna say we know. I mean, we know what happened. We just don't know how. You know, we don't know personally how that feels and stuff. But it's like, all right, there are some still survivors around today.
Yeah,
from it.
One of them is Eric.
Exactly. So, and we know the, especially in a hyper universe like the Marvel universe of like fears of humanity, and that's the whole, you know, X-Men story of like they fear us, like they'll never, like, and that's a thing. And also, he's right a lot of the time.
Yeah, the underlying the underlying like. Crux of what makes X-Men conflicts go round does just lend itself well to like A, empathetic villains, and B, a good villain flip. Like you're already halfway there with like, yeah, the means are bad, but I see the ends that they're looking for. I understand.
I told before about how like his first plan in the first X-Men movie, great plan.
Sure, yeah,
great
until it's like.
Until he's like, oh, I didn't know that was the case. But, you know, even if he was like, okay, that one guy died from this thing, I should turn him into mutants.
Could have just been one. We should test on something else.
Could have just been him. He could have had weird DNA,
yeah,
for all we know.
Maybe he was already a mutant and he just hadn't shared that yet. No, number one, solid take. And
it's funny. He might be the only, like, bad guy. In a like understandable bad guy, like right, like we have, he might be the only understandable bad guy that's like, why are you guys getting in his way? Because like, you know, you think of other characters like Killmonger, right? But Killmonger got to a point where it was like, I'm gonna throw all the weapons at people, which would end up killing thousands, millions of people, innocent people. You're like, nah, like they, oftentimes when writers are writing, and I don't envy them or this or judge them for this, like they have to make the villain cross a certain line that's like, all right, if you didn't cross that line, I would have been with you fully 100%. Mm-hmm. Right? Because like you have to make the bad guy bad enough that the good guy has to stop them, and not where the audience is agreeing with them fully. Right? Like they, Kuvira, like I am with Kuvira until she's like, I gotta take over Zhaofu. It's like, you didn't have to take over Zhaofu. Like, Zhaofu was fine. But I understand you wanting not to give over power to this stupid prince guy.
Yeah, sure.
But you didn't need to take over Zhaofu because Zhaofu was fully fine and functional without their hindrance.
Yeah. And then even if the Zhaofu didn't get you, I think it's about the time where she's like, I guess I'll kill Batar. And it's like, okay. She's lost sight of some important priorities here.
Yeah. Or she's like, I'm going to take over Public City. Public City didn't need to be taken over. It was completely sound. Like, you're just becoming more so a dictator.
Yeah, just do the Earth Kingdom part that needed it. You know, that was good. That's good stuff.
But I understand the difficulty of trying to write a villain with really good reasons and convictions. And needing them to cross a line that, even though it feels, sometimes it might feel a little forced, but you have to create opposition.
Yeah, but
you have to make it to where, like, are clear.
But Magneto,
if you don't, then if you don't, the audience is going to start rooting for the bad guy, and that's not how that's not how writers want that to go.
Magneto, good balance of those things. In the first flick, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Second movie, he was like, I'm going to kill all humans.
Yeah, that got a little...
I was like, let's stop him. Well, let's stop him.
Well, then we talked about the third movie before it kind of flips the switch and just has like the really weirdly low stakes. But that would, that one being said, as many,
well, you know, I actually understand
issues.
Like, he was like, I gotta kill.
The issues aside that I have maybe with the third movie, his motives in that movie, there again, are kind of like,
yeah,
that's not even really crossing too big of a line. Like, I get what you're, I get the cost that you're willing to pay here, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, he's like one, and I, this is really, wow, X-Men 3 really does get enough credit. Because I fully understand both sides of the argument of, like, we will not let you kill this child.
Sure.
Like, this is a child. It's like, I don't care what the price
who is. Who is born with a thing.
Yeah. While Magneto's like, they're going to take this cure, and they're going, this cure, and they're going to use it on all of us. Like, and they are. That's, even though they, like, that's, that is, humanity's definitely going to do that. And he's like, this one child. It's one child.
The way that he addresses the child so respectfully, too, he doesn't dismiss it like it's nothing in the movie. Yeah. Like the tone, and that's just good acting. That's just what's his name.
Ian McKellen.
That one. That's just great acting. But he treats it with an air of respect. Like, he knows it is a cost. He's not just like, oh, I'm going to kill the kid and problems are solved. He's like, no, it's this. Like, there's a tone of. This loss of one life for the preservation of many is a cost that he understands.
Yeah.
But a lot of that's also good acting or great acting. Even.
I feel like I'm just staring at my Magneto section. Well, it's a Marvel section. Helmet. Marvel gets three kills. I have a statue and I have a helmet. Yeah.
Good. Well-crafted movie villain, Magneto, well-crafted villain. Who also himself could have, I said, he could have qualified as like a turn, but they're just always, even after like Days of Future Past, you always feel like his motivations would probably shift back to the two sketch.
Yeah, in the comics, he often works hand in hand with Charles because sometimes he gets to the point of like, I won't say the most recent comics I read, which was years ago. Charles, for some reason. It's like, you know what? I think they create an island for mutants or something, and him and Magneto join forces and stuff. And there's always something that gets in the way because humanity always goes slightly too far.
Always.
And stuff like that. and that's what drives those two apart. And it's so good. Like, they're best friends. Like, and they just have different ideas on how to solve the same problem.
Yeah, hey, that, now put those movies on my list. You know, not all of them, though. I just do the five. I don't do the Wolverines. I don't do anything after Days of Future Past. I just do the three and then First Class and Days of Future.
You know what movie's overrated? Logan.
Logan's overrated. It's fine. But I didn't need that hype that we went through where it's like, oh, finally this X-rated super is like, oh, I don't need it. You know what movie, Chris, the only time travel movie that I don't bitch about is Days of Future Past. I think it probably addresses it as well as I can accept.
Yeah, I think so too. Well,
as well as a singular timeline, time travel movie could, I think. Now I've talked way too long. I mean, read.
We haven't talked in a long on this. We've been talking for like an hour and 23 minutes.
Indeed. But, yeah. Hey, thanks for watching. This is Avatar The Last Podcasters. My name's Sean. That's my friend Chris Ford, a.k.a. The Objective Geek. I'll put all the stuff down in the description. Thumbs ups, likes, comments, positive reviews, bells, subscriptions. We like them all, if you're willing. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time.